You need to walk the talk. You need to make sure that you create that vision, put a strategy, you make sure that everyone is accountable. But at the same token, when it matters, we need to have their back and people need to be able to reach out to you for whatever it is.
Welcome to Revenue Insights. Every week, we'll be joined by revenue leaders from some of the most successful and highest growing companies. Together, we explore how they built their revenue teams, the journeys that they've been on, and the lessons they have learned along the way. Revenue Insights is brought to you by Ebster. We're a revenue intelligence platform designed to help revenue teams to build more pipeline, close more deals, and retain more customers.
Hello there. You are listening to Revenue Insights. I'm joined today by Willem Hendricks. He's currently the Chief Revenue Officer at Vectra AI. Willem's career has taken him from a sales leader at numerous technology organizations across EMEA through to his role today at Vectra in the US. Willem, been looking forward to this.
Awesome. It's great to be here, Ali.
I've genuinely been looking forward to this. I know that we've been trying to get this in for a little while, but for anyone that isn't maybe as excited as I and maybe don't know who Willem is, can you tell them a little bit more about your story, how you've got to where you are today?
Sure. I mean, the story goes back for a long, long time since you look at my hair and I'm a bit gray, but I always wanted to go into sales was my ambition. My dad was actually a procurement guy, so I wanted to do in sales. Not that I don't love my dad. I do love him, but I wanted to go in sales and prove out that I could do that. And so I started with Xerox, which was that moment in time, the biggest sales, I think, educational environment to be in. I ended up at PTC, which is basically now the Bible of MedTech. I spent 5 years at five promotions. I went to EMC, which is probably my longest tenure for 10 years, where I was from country manager in the Netherlands. It's always nice to be a Belgian and be country manager in the Netherlands. And I ended up running global channels. Then I went to a customer, which was a system integrator. I did Alcatel-Lucent, which was basically a $4 billion operation. I had my own company. And now I'm super happy that I'm CRO at Vectra, which is basically a US-based very big upcoming cybersecurity organization and company. We have a mission to make the world a safer place, and that's really cool to be there.
It's an awesome mission. And I know coming into this, you've a few weeks ago, delivered your SKO to your team. I'm just curious, what's your overarching message to your team this year?
Well, it's how to make the quarter, right? I mean, SKO is all about rattling the troops to make sure that the strategy of the company is really, really clear for everyone, that there's a consistent messaging. I give them education on how to make the number. I give them tools on how to do that. We invited a lot of customers, by the way, and also partners. They actually participated throughout the whole SKO, which is very rare. And then also they can see our culture. And one of the most nicest things what I hear from my customer or partners who attended the SKO is that we love your culture. And I think this is one item that you want to give to your folks to be there for them. But most important thing is, like, I really believe an SKO is there to create like a vision of we can do this and hit and overachieve the number, and then explain on how we can overachieve the number. And I think everyone is super excited for this year, and we're looking forward to do great things in 2024.
I love that. And I can feel the energy already.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, really.
So can I ask, what is perhaps in that how we're going to achieve our number, what is perhaps the one initiative that you are most excited about as part of that?
Well, first is opportunity, right? I mean, if you need to outline what the opportunity is, right? And so hence the opportunity comes from showing them how we have been doing with certain segment of the market with customers and how much the opportunity is to actually find new customers in that particular segment, for example, and talk about the use cases. That's number one. Secondly, the other opportunity is always about cross-sell and upsell. I think our overall mission is to grow ARR, to grow NACV, but NRR is super important, taking care of our customers so that they don't churn, but the upsell and cross-sell. So also you quantify how much each individual has for upsell and cross-sell opportunity. I mean, really you quantify that. And then you basically put a plan in place on how to target that so that they can go after it. So net new customers, upsell. I mean, I would say those are the two big items to make sure that they understand and quantify that data so that they can go after it. And then last but not least, you need to make sure that the ecosystem around that works, which basically means, like, okay, what are you doing with your overall partner ecosystem? Because you're not alone. How do you work with your channels? Secondly is, okay, marketing is there to support you to create your pipeline. And then, of course, we have ADRs as basically on the phone to also increase the overall pipeline. So it's not only about the individual, it's also about making sure that they know that the company is behind them and we're all together in winning new customers and keeping our customers basically safe. And that goes from the CEO, customer first, that goes from me, and we will jump on every single call, whatever is needed. But again, net new customers and then cross-sell and upsell.
Of all of that, what I'm really interested to dig into a bit more. You mentioned around the partner ecosystem and having some of your partners in the room. So drawing from some of the analysis that we did recently, at a high level, it looked at really the huge amount of ROI that businesses, that certainly we analyze, get back from partnerships. Now, often it takes a while to get it up and running, sure. But if you can crack that nut, the ROI is tremendous. And I think it was something like around about 12% of the companies that we analyze actually had a partnership function. So I'm very curious to dig into that a bit more from Vectra's perspective. Can you just kind of give an overview of what your partner approach is like and perhaps how you've been able to find success with it?
Well, first, you need to be consistent. So one of the things that we said is that 100% of our business goes through partners. So it's clear. So then there's no ambiguity. Is it direct or indirect? Because I've been throughout my career, have seen multiple models. I think that you need to be consistent with your partner. Secondly, when you talk with partners, you need to make sure that everyone of the company realize that the partner is important. It's not only the channel person, it's also the rep, it's me, it's everyone needs to be engaged with that. And then you take a step back and say, okay, what are the partners that we should work with? And then you have like large organizations, like big system integrators, which are super important for us when you want to cover the high end of the market. Secondly, you have like, for example, mid-sized MSSPs who can take, for example, our product in their overall SOC to actually provide an end-to-end service to their customers, which is net new for us. And three, you have a lot of resellers, right? National resellers in the US, for example, and the small resellers. So I think these are the three kind of like main partners that we're looking at. I think it's important that you focus. You don't have to have too many. You need to make sure that you have enough good ones with the right skills, where also the commitment from both sides, it's really tight in a kind of a framework and engagement. And last but not least, you also need to make sure that when you want to be scaling, you need to work also with your technology partners to see that you can, how can you help each other in order to win the market. And technology partners, these are, for example, EDR partners, for example, we could be CrowdStrike. We just launched something together with Gigamon, for example. And that helps because it end-to-end solution is what customers are looking for. But secondly, they have customers, we have customers, we can actually review them together and say, okay, and increase our overall pipeline. And in my opinion, is a company that really understands how to crack the channel and the way you need to do it is how you can actually be a profitable, scalable company. Because, and again, this is also depending on the theater, because we have the Americas, we have EMEA, we have APJ. But no matter what, right, having the right partners allows you to scale fast and in a good way. But it takes time.
Just a quick reminder, and then we will be right back to the show. At Revenue Insights, our goal is to share how top-performing revenue leaders build predictable, efficient go-to-market teams. Every week, we speak to the brightest minds, and every quarter, we release the latest findings from our analysis of billions of dollars in pipeline. If you don't want to miss out, sign up to our newsletter at ebster.com/newsletter-signup. That's ebster.com/newsletter-signup. The link to make that a little bit easier for you will be in the show notes of this episode, wherever you're listening. See you there. Absolutely. The obvious question to me then is, how do you know who is the right partner? What are the qualities of a good partner?
That's a good thing, right? It's a good question. But again, data tells you, right? You actually, it's all about skills. So for example, when we are doing cybersecurity, you have like many specialized cybersecurity companies where we know that the customer are trusting those cyber companies to bring added value to them. They reach out to those cyber companies for advice, for support. Now, it's very logical, right, that you, for example, go to them to see that we can add value to their overall end-to-end solution to their overall customers, for example. So it's all of those criteria. We look at that and we see which are the ones. The second thing is also commitment. There are many partners on paper that are looking good, but if there's no commitment from the top and there's no commitment from our perspective on the top, it's nice, but it's never a relationship. A partnership goes both ways, right? And you need to make sure that you look into each other's eyes and say, okay, here's what we're going to do and what we're going to go for. Because any partnership, there will be glips, there will be issues. It's how you deal with those issues. And when you have a trusted relationship and you can escalate, it goes very, very well. So I would say qualification, but secondly is also commitment, have a clear business plan together on how we're going to address the market.
If there was someone listening to this and going, yeah, you know what, this year or certainly going into like the next financial year, they're looking at really exploring that channel. What would your advice be to them building out a partnerships channel for the first time?
First, you need to do an analysis, right? As always, we have data, right? Data is importantly is like, what is your overall solution? How does it fit, right? And then who are those particular partners that actually are most logical for you to drive the go-to-market with and how? And then secondly, create like a focus program that allows you to really work with those partners in a committed way and drive this forward. But more importantly, if you want to do it, it needs to be consistent. I've seen many, many companies that say, we're going to do a business and we do a deal. And then afterwards, the deal goes to another partner or it goes basically direct. I mean, that's not about building relationship. It's not because at the end of the quarter that you need to change your strategy. You need to be making sure that we are here for building a business for the long term. These partners are here for building a business in the long term. A quarter doesn't matter in that thing. And we need to think more long term when we are approaching those partners. And I think sometimes in the heat of the night, on the end of the quarter, some stupid things are happening and you need to avoid that.
I mean, I think that last bit is really sage advice. And on your point of thinking for the long term and to move this away probably from a discussion on partnerships and thinking more generally across the revenue function, how are you planning for the long term? And maybe to get more specific on that, how do you plan for the long term across your sales function and how are you communicating that down to your teams?
We basically have like metrics that we have to hit, right, Lee? That's pretty clear. And of course, metrics is like the street. I mean, you have to hit your overall growth of ARR, your NCV and NRR. It needs to be very, very clear that the leadership also has to carry that, right? And so compensation plans needs to be aligned so that we can actually drive the same kind of goals. How we, of course, need to structure it is also to see, like, where is the opportunity? I mean, the reality is that you can't hire every rep everywhere. So you need to be very, very, very clear and methodology, like, how can we afford? What's the situation where we can put a rep and where we can't put a rep? For example, if you want to open up a new territory and there is no pipeline, probably it's not a good idea at this moment in time to say, okay, we're going to hire a rep and an SE. My thing is you should actually create pipeline. You should already have partners in that particular territory. So you can actually start with a partner landscape to say, okay, what are you doing making the first deal before you basically then go in that country, for example, because it's all about, and you know as well, things have changed. It's also about profit. It's not only about growth. It's about profitability and growth at the same time. And so you need to be very, very conscious on where to invest and where not to invest using the right metrics. And these metrics has to be very, very clear for every RD, I would say, for management, but also for the sales. So every 2 weeks, for example, I provide a scorecard, which is about NECV. It's about the pipeline. It's about all the thing that matters to me. And it's very openly shared so that everyone can look at that, not to say, hey, why are you doing it badly? But also to see who is it doing it good so they can reach out to that particular rep, like, what are you doing differently to help me? And so we create that kind of environment where it's not about an inspection only, but a working and collaborative environment to see how we can make each other better.
Very curious around the scorecard. So is that scorecard kind of a between yourself and the rep? So directly gathering their feedback on the front line so you've got that insight, or is it kind of going via your manager?
No. It's basically, I mean, we have the management scorecard. It's, you know, again, when you think about the fact that you have a company and you have to get to your goals, how you can actually take those things that you need to do and bring it down so every individual feels responsible, but also accountable for delivering something that is meaningful for that particular company. So hence, when you create like particular scorecards, then the team knows like that what I think is important and what I'm expecting from every individual so that they can drive it. And we can actually put things in place, enablement in place to help them to get to those particular goals. But at least it's clear, right? And it takes a long time to get there. But once you get those core cards out, which we recently did, then that's the way. And I make the analogy with Barcelona, because I was in Barcelona. It's also a football team, but Barcelona's also after the game, they inspect, right? Not to inspect what you did wrong, but okay, how many passes, how many percentage, what did you do well? in order so that basically the trainers can actually educate them to say, okay, here's what's good, what's bad, let's get better. So I think we need to get to a kind of same sales is about making sure leadership is helping the reps finding certain weaknesses, but helping them to overcome those weaknesses. It's our job to make everyone better. And those scorecards allows them not only to see where they rank, but also allows them to reach out to one of the reps, for example, is great in pipeline building and say, what are you doing? Because it can't only come from me. It only comes from anyone. At the end of the day, if you have an organization or society where everyone is like trying to work with each other, and again, that's why SKO is so important, then it cultivates innovation and it cultivates also thinking. And I think that is super important. It's not easy to get there, but I think it's super important that organizations think like this, and hopefully we can get as much out of that as possible. I really believe that it's our role. Every rep can be successful. Every rep, as long as the rep wants to be successful.
I love the idea and I completely agree with your approach. Could you maybe indulge me a little? On the scorecard, could you give some examples of like the kind of things that you're asking them to score?
So for example, if you look at add-on business, right? I just explained to you that, right? So how can we get to an NRR of X? How that translates to someone in Switzerland? How does it translate to someone in the US, in Texas? Okay, you know what? Here you have X amount of accounts, right? So for you to hit that number, right? Here is basically the amount of money that we need to get from our customer base. And so that's, for example, something that we track and manage. Now behind that, we do things. We do enablement sessions. We do webinars. We are pushing certain things out. The marketing is behind that. We have product management behind that. But the reality is just that they show to say, okay, if I hit my NRR in my own patch, I help the company. I want every of my reps to be entrepreneurs. I want every one of my reps to be franchise. They should own their franchise. That's the way I looked upon my business. When I run a territory, I'm like, how can I make sure that I run the territory as good as possible? How can I do that? And I think the word franchise is super important for me. And I think some people, some reps are just looking at accounts. I want my reps to look at a franchise and use the tools and the resources available that are out there to make this franchise awesome and grow and continue to grow. And if they do that, they make money. But it also allows them to not, you know, the most important one is a franchise. You take care of your customers, Lee, because your customers are your biggest advocate. It also means that if you take care of your customers, you have less churn, which helps me to reduce my overall churn in the organization. And so these scorecards are just reflections of what we want to achieve from the company perspective. Does it make sense?
That makes perfect sense. Now, there was something that you mentioned that I just want to pull from. You want all reps who, as long as they are committed to be successful within Vectra, I'm paraphrasing ever so slightly. How do you approach from a leadership position ensuring that that happens? So how, because to give like a bit of context maybe behind the question, from the analyses that we run, something like 69% of reps across kind of the 530 companies that we analyzed are missing quota at the minute. So only 31% are hitting quota. So everything that you're saying is everything that I think a lot of businesses aspire to be, aspiring to have the vast majority of their reps hitting and exceeding their number. So as someone who is really advocating for it, I'm very interested to know like how you are approaching internally, making sure that your teams are high performers.
Again, I want to say two things about this, right, Lee? The first thing is that I think a lot of CROs in the past have been hiring too many reps as well. And so if we have too many reps, because the cost didn't really matter. Hence, we have a lot of people who are not making numbers because the pipeline is not there to support the amount of reps. So I think it's our job as well to make sure that we're not doing that. So that's number one. But the way I look upon it, my responsibility is what I call the three R's. It goes back from the past. It's revenue, it's basically recruitment, and it's retainment, right? And so the first thing you need to make sure when you want to be successful is to make sure that we are hiring the right people. That's not an easy job. The recruiting is something that is not an HR task. It's a management task. It's something that you do every single day. If I have to recruit, I'm actually recruiting every single day, calling people, seeing who, you know, making references to make sure I have the right candidate. And it's all about, in my opinion, about the character, right? The character of the person, the perseverance, because what we do is not easy. I mean, it's a tough market out there. It's not like, so you need to be like, you have to have stamina to do that. So you basically need to make sure that we qualify those particular people who want to have that particular fight, who want to fight with your team players. and have the character to do that. And so once you've done that, then of course it's our job to make sure that now they're successful. But I tell you, the better you recruit, the better we're going to be successful. And then it's about retainment. And retainment is, of course, something crucial. So if we, for example, see that the pipeline of a certain person, I'm just saying something in Chicago, is not good enough, then I think we need to sit down as a management team and say, okay, how can we help you to create more pipeline in that particular region so we can support that team? Or how can Channel, for example, help to go with the partners in order to make sure that the pipeline grows? Or can the ADR make some call out so that the pipeline grows, right? Because again, if we did the right recruitment, it's clear that the person is the right fit. Otherwise, we missed something. If the right fit, we need to make sure that he gets around it and we help them winning the first deal. But secondly, and the most important thing right now, Lee, is pipeline, right? The pipeline is key. If you go back a year ago, 2 years ago, times three, times four, you were good. You need seven times eight right now. So at the end of the day, it's all about making sure us that the pipeline goes up. And that's why two streams. One, net new accounts. How can we get that? Can we have the partners working with us to identify those accounts that we can go into? Secondly, add on business, right? And so it's also very important that we are sure that if someone has a lot of accounts, that we also making sure that he gets enough support on the add-on business, for example, because the NRR there is bigger than, for example, who has a fresh new territory. So that's the way we need to look at it. And having enablement also, of course, supporting the thing. And last but not least, it's the RD job. I mean, the RD job needs to sit down and we have like a dashboard where we can sit down with a rep like, okay, how was your week? What did you do? How many calls did you make? Who are the partners that you visit? Did you really visit those focus partners? How did it go with that? How are we doing? And so that the RD is a coach. He's not an inspection. He's a coach. Coach helping to make sure that the rep is going to be successful. Now, again, it's up to the rep to deliver. It's up to the rep to be accountable. I want to see accountability there too. If we are giving so much, luckily that most of them do, but that comes back to character and stamina. But if you data and you're about data, Lee, it's all about data. Data never lies when you have a Monday call with your rep. Never, never lies.
There's so many nuggets of gold that I want to pull from there. And let me focus on one because you mentioned it a few times, character. What is an underrated characteristic when you're in the that you're looking for in the hiring process?
I mean, it's hard to define character, but someone, for example, who did high-level sports is probably, he did sacrifices, or someone who had like, sometimes, you know, not an easy youth, right? And they basically worked while he basically was studying. I mean, someone who wants to make something out of his life. So, I mean, looking at those particular characters, this is something unique, right? It's not only about your, at the minute we are talking about career, but are you doing something unique? Did you do something for your mother, for example, that was super unique because you had to do something? That's all what I call character. It's all about people. And again, this comes back, and this is for me super important. If you want to build a company, it's also which company you would like to build. I would love to build a company with the right culture, with people that I also can have a beer with in the evening. I hope, not everyone, but you want to have also nice people, right? Because our customers also feel that who are the ones that are listening to me, who are the ones who have empathy for me, who are those particular people that are care for me at the same token. Yes, we want to do the deals, but at the same token, we want to do it in the right way, in the right methodology. And that is something that I'm looking for.
Perfect. I want to pull back and just, there was something that you mentioned that I'm curious around. You mentioned pipeline and going from, you know, a couple of years ago, you needed 3 to 4x, and you mentioned now you need 7 to 8x. I'm curious, do you see it from the perspective of quantity or quality when it comes to pipeline in 2024?
Well, but both. You need to do both, right? But I'm just generalizing, right? If you have like, I mean, the market is, since last year, as everyone knows, is way tougher. Budget has been cut. So you actually have to have more value to those overall customers. You have to quantify better too. It's not only having the pipeline, but also saying, no, we're not going to do that. I mean, it's hard as a rep to say no, but if you have enough pipeline, you can quantify better too. So as a result, you can actually pick. And of course, Lee, when you have like upsell and cross-sell, your pipeline probably needs to be times two or three because there are customers, they know the value. It's an easier upsell and cross-sell. Again, provided you take care of the customer in the right way and they're happy with the value you bring. But in generally speaking, I think it's pretty clear since last year that the pipeline needs to go up. And when you look at the pipeline, you need to look at the beginning of the pipeline, but also on conversion rates, right? You also need to say like, okay, how much of that pipeline goes into, for example, POV? Because once it's in POV, it's an easier number to track. We know when we are in POV, even against competitors, what the result will need to be. So the question is like, we need to make sure that we're not pushing too much to POV, which is not quantified. You need to make sure there's a clear map, mutual engagement plan with the customer on how and what we're going to do and deliver. But if you do that, then it's good. But again, if you have more pipeline, problems get solved.
Absolutely. So how do you go about ensuring across your teams that they have quality pipeline?
Inspection, Lee. I mean, quite frankly, it's coming to inspection and helping them, but ADRs also is helping them, right? I mean, ADRs can quantify basically the tunnel in, and they can quantify like, okay, is there a particular project? Is there something that we should go after? Or is it something that is basically nothing? And so qualification in those stages in the beginning is super important. This goes back to my point. If you don't have a lot of pipeline, you hold on to everything while you know in your heart it's not the right one. But qualification is super important. ADRs are helping us tremendously with that. And the second thing, partners are also helping us with that, because you can go to your partner and say, hey, is there a real budget? What do you think? If a partner is really knowing that customer, could you check out what it is? Is it really there? Is there a pain? Because at the end of the day, Lee, what we need to do is understand there's a pain. If you understand there's a pain, we can create something. If you don't have a pain, there's nothing to go after. So that's what we need to do.
Just a quick reminder, and then we will be right back to the show. At Revenue Insights, our goal is to share how top-performing revenue leaders build predictable, efficient go-to-market teams. Every week, we speak to the brightest minds, and every quarter, we release the latest findings from our analysis of billions of dollars in pipeline. If you don't want to miss out, sign up to our newsletter at ebster.com/newsletter-signup. That's ebster.com/newsletter-signup. The link, to make that a little bit easier for you, will be in the show notes of this episode wherever you're listening. See you there. I love that point. And I'm curious to probably dig into a little bit more around something that we touched on actually before jumping onto the call, because we were talking about qualification and I was casually name dropping different methodologies, MedPIC included. So, and also, you know, candidly, when asking the question around like pipeline generation and the quality of it, I feel like a lot of folks I talk to would jump to the importance of a qualification methodology to ensure the quality of it. And actually, you actually touched on a couple of different ways of ensuring that it is quality. So I'd like to open that up and really get your perspective on the role of qualification of a methodology such as MedPIC, although not exclusive to. So I guess question one is, do you use one within your methodology? And two, what role does it play?
Sure. Like everyone else, we're using MedPIC in the past. 1996, it was MedIC. It was invented by PTC and we were using it. As I said, I was lucky to work 5 years with them. But it was a qualification tool, right? And I think a lot of other folks are using it sometimes a little bit overhyped and use it as a different tool, but it's just a qualification tool and allowing us to see what are the gaps, right? What are the gaps that we have to fill in order to make sure that the project moves on from one stage to another? Yes, we are using that. I think the biggest thing for me in anything that is met in MedPIC or MedIC is the champion. I mean, you can do anything what you want, but I always will ask the question, do we have a champion? I mean, even if you don't have an economic buyer, and of course we want to have an economic buyer, if the champion is really, really a strong champion and we have a business case, we can win the deal. So I think from all of the qualification, I would say the champion. I think there's two champions, Lee. There's a champion that pushed the project forward, and there's also a technical champion. And I also remind my SE teams that it's also their job to create technical champions within the account so that we basically are making sure that the qualification not only is done, but also that the chances of winning the deal is extremely high. And when you follow that particular process, then the deals will come to you. That's what I'm saying, right? If you are very clear, the question is, how do you get to that stage? I mean, that's the biggest thing right now. But once we're in that stage, we're using MedIC and we're using also MAP, which is basically Mutual and Agreement Action Plan, which we, for bigger deals, we put it in front of the customer. And we have like every week or whatever, every 2 weeks, we know. So here's, we have the deal we're going to close. I'm just saying within 3 months, we agree upon that. And we agree upon here are the things we need to do in order to make, it's like a project plan, but agreed with the customer, which we review on a daily basis or 2 daily basis, depending on the situation. And that works very well because, again, that's more a kind of partnership with the customer. And that is something that I really, really push to my teams, definitely when it's larger deals.
I'm definitely seeing, you mentioned, you know, that partnership with the customer, that particular perspective feels like almost making a comeback in the last 12 months. I think maybe in the previous 3 years, it was the kind of boom times that we had, it was easy to forget about, seemingly seemed to lose its importance. Although, as I say that, evidently it's a case of, I watch as you shake your head a little bit, it was it never lost its importance, right?
For me and for us, it was always there. And I can tell you, I mean, I just took someone out because he didn't spoke with the customer for the last 7 months. And I'm like, that is unacceptable. It's just unacceptable. If we value our customers, we need to make sure there's enough touch point. You cannot only rely on your customer success person. As a rep, you need to make sure that you call, you see how is it going. It doesn't take you too long time in order to make sure that everything is going well. And so we take this very seriously. And I'm happy that there's a change, Lee, because I do agree with you. It's like people really sometimes didn't care. Also think sometimes the customer is also not, some of the customers don't care either. But I think if you really, really start from an approach from a partnership perspective, I think that's the way it should be. Because listen, what we do is meaningful. I mean, we protect, right? I mean, we make them safe. That is damn meaningful. It means something for my customer. And so I want everyone in my organization to make sure they feel that and that they are giving that value to them. Because what we do matters. It just matters. And if you have that in mind, of course, we should have a partnership with our customer.
I bet you have some pretty cracking customer stories of instances there where I'm sure in the cybersecurity space, fending off those attacks is tremendously important, right?
It's the heart of matters. And unfortunately, there are more and more attacks every single day. There are more sophisticated attacks every day. They're using AI too. So again, doing this cybersecurity is not Willem or anyone else. It's an ecosystem of everyone fighting together for making sure that we protect. And so that's why I'm saying, like, I'm very, very fortunately to work in Vectra, to work with an amazing technology, but also that actually protects those product customers every single day. And having people, I want my folks and my people to feel that. And I want them to, because also I think my customers feel that too when they see that. I mean, we matter. We matter to them.
Well, I can say as a humble podcast interviewer, I feel it. So I'm certain they do too. An ultimate question. What would you say, how do you approach leadership, maybe in a different way to how your peers do? What do you think is maybe like fairly unique about your leadership, if anything?
I don't know. It's hard to compare with my peers. I think at the end of the day, I think you need to be there for your people, right? This is my motto that my folks know that I'm there for them. My folks that I'm working probably as hard, probably way more harder than them because it means for them. So I think it's not only, I think what we need to do is both. You need to walk the talk. You need to make sure that you create that vision. You need to make sure that you put a strategy, that you make sure that everyone is accountable. But at the same token, when it matters, we need to have their back and people need to be able to reach out to you for whatever it is. The nicest thing in your career, Lee, is when people send you a message and say, remember 15, 20 years ago, what you've done for me on that one, I never forgot that and I got a better person. There's nothing more rewarding. And I think this is why we do it for, right? We do it one on the customer side, but we do it also because we see some young people growing in the organization, become more confident every single day and be a better human being. It's just awesome.
That was a beautiful response. Last question. What is one book that you'd recommend to other revenue leaders?
Well, I mean, there's many, but I think from a practical perspective, and as I said, I was with PTC and John McMahon was there. So I think the qualified sales leader, because if you want to have a book, it needs to be for all of the audiences, right? It needs to be simple. It needs to be methodological, practical. And I think the qualified sales leader from John is just an incredible book. It's there for a rep. It's there for leadership. It's there for marketing. It's fantastic. And it actually describes real life stories about QBRs and all of that. And I definitely would recommend everyone to read that. Actually, I gave it to all my folks because not only the fact that it comes back memories from me from PTC, but it's just easy to read and it just gives you so much value.
Fantastic. I need to put it on my reading list, evidently.
Please do. No, please do. It's just awesome.
All right, Willem, it's been an absolute pleasure. I will put links in the show notes down to the qualified sales leader. For anyone that's listened that maybe has any questions, wants to reach out and maybe pick your brain a little bit further than I already have, where can they find you?
They can find me on LinkedIn. So, I mean, I'm on LinkedIn, Willem Hendricks Vectra. So it's easy to do. So I think send me a message and I'm happy to see that I can get back to you. As you know, Lee, sometimes, you know, I've been back and forth during a lot of traveling. So give me sometimes some time, but I'll always come back to you. So
absolutely. And I will say it's been absolutely worth the wait. So thank you so much for your time. I'll put a link to your LinkedIn down in the show notes as well. Willem, thank you so much again. Really appreciate it.
Thank you, Lee. Thank you. And talk soon. Thank you very much. We speak.
Thanks for listening to Revenue Insights. If you want to learn more, subscribe to our newsletter and we'll deliver every episode straight to your inbox. If you have any questions, feel free to connect with us on LinkedIn. Our links will be in the episode notes. See you next week.